Hello everybody, welcome and kumusta. Thank you for joining me. This is How, your occupational therapist, and welcome to Occupational Therapy Conversations. I have just been thinking about a clinical practice and our approach when it comes to rehabilitation. When I say clinical practice, this would be critical care. What's happening in critical care medicine or intensive care medicine? The objective in that field of healthcare would be to get the person's homeostasis and to regain homeostasis of the body. We provide pharmacological interventions to it, chemical interventions, to control how each organ would behave. I was reflecting on some of the devices that we use when those organs are not functioning properly. These devices are technically adaptive aids. If I wear the goggles of an occupational therapist, I see these devices as an adaptive aid. What are these adaptive aids for the organs? For the lungs, you can have a ventilator because it will be doing the responsibility of inflating, deflating. It does that. And there's an element where it is a supportive device because it will supplement the body with oxygen. So that's one. When it comes to the heart, when it comes to the beating of the heart, the first line being medical intervention, so you would have different levels of ionotropes, but these are all chemicals. After that, when all fails, and there is a need for the heart to mechanically move the blood around the system, then you will have to use ventricular assistive devices. You can have these devices called impeller, and you can have intra-aortic balloon pumps. And again, it helps, but it also prevents some problems in terms of the function. Adaptive devices that fixes the problem. And when it comes to the beating and the rate, then yes, you have these pacing boxes temporarily, initially. Now, for the lungs as well, the most extreme adaptive device of the lungs is this extracorporeal membranous oxygenation, where it takes the blood out of the system, it removes the carbon dioxide, replaces it with oxygen, and puts it back in the body. So those are the adaptive devices. When it comes to the kidneys, then you have these dialysis machine where it filters the blood, takes out all the waste products, and then puts the blood back in the system as well. When it comes to the gastrointestinal system, there is not a lot of adaptive device for that. Okay? When it comes to the brain, again, there aren't any adaptive device on that. So that's what it would be in critical care medicine. Adaptive equipment would be the ones that would either help the organ function so that it can recover. It will take that responsibility. As a therapist, function, there's no adaptive aids. One adaptive aid is for somebody else to do it for them. So that's a supportive intervention. We're not there yet. We're not going to offer that supportive intervention long term because critical care medicine is a transient situation, temporary. But there is one adaptive device, or there is a need for an adaptive device for us to use. And I don't know if that has been explored yet. What organ is missing its function, and we can probably do something about it? The organ would have been the musculoskeletal organ. The muscles is the skeleton. Yeah, you can either fixate it temporarily if you have fractures, external fixators. But then the muscles, these are functioning unit of the body, and they stop working, and it needs to move. It needs to function, because if it stops functioning, it will lose its ability to move once the person is recovered. And that's because there would be a lot of mitochondrial decay in a diseased muscle. And when there is no mitochondria, the production of the ATP would be very limited. And these are all very vital and very important when we are doing our contraction. And I don't know if we are doing enough on preserving the muscles. So what are the adaptive devices for the muscles? You can have two things. One, you can have a mechanical adaptive device, and the other one would be an electrical adaptive device, because muscles, they needed two major stimulation, electrical stimulation and mechanical stimulation. When it comes to mechanical stimulation, there is nothing formally accepted to provide that apart from manual manipulation. This can be done by another therapist, the form of massage, that's what you would call it. When somebody is massaging the muscle, you are stimulating all these Golgi tendon organs, muscle spindles, the proprioceptors. You are also mechanically moving the tissue, influencing the flexibility of the muscles. The one thing I was excited about was this IPC, intermittent pressure compression. The initial reason why these things were used is because these IPC sleeves were to prevent deep vein thrombosis, but it also has an effect on stimulating the muscles, particularly the bigger muscles. And that was good. So the idea now would be to stimulate the muscle groups that we can access mechanically through manual stimulation from a therapist, from a live person, or we come up with a device that will do this, that will generously provide a consistent stimulation. Yeah. From the time they are ill, stimulate straight away. The next thing is the electrical stimulation. Here with physiology, muscle contraction starts with nerve stimulation from the brain or peripheral nerves. If the patient is not doing it, you need to stimulate it. And what's the best way to stimulate the person, the electrical nerves input? It is through electrical stimulation, which is a physical device, an adaptive tool. That's a tool of the trade of physiotherapy and occupational therapy in the United States. You can use electrical stimulation because when you stimulate the nerves, you are generating acetylcholine. Acetylcholine will then produce, will enable the muscles to release more calcium, essential for contraction. There are gaps in terms of the body of knowledge, and whether there are researches about that, the thing is the terminologies are not the same, so everybody names it separately and differently. So I doubt if there is an actual evidence about that, because the lexicon itself, if you do a word search for literature review, it's already different. So there you go, guys. These are lines of inquiry we can produce and investigate. In critical care, when a person becomes unwell, leading to their admission in critical care, there has been a big gap and a big lull in their stimulation. They remain in bed for a long time, then that is where the trigger, that is when it happens. So the weakness happens long before a person gets admitted in critical care. And that's where the intervention needs to start. If we stimulate the person at the period when they are getting unwell, where they've been in bed, could we prevent more of this, what you would call intensive care syndrome? Post-intensive care syndrome. We need to start looking after our patients at the very acute stage. We cannot give up and say there is no time. We need to manage that. Just a thought. I hope you learned something from this conversation. Until next time, bye.